Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise to help you grow your business. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host and creator of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we turn experts in tech into authorities, conversations into clients, and expertise into pipeline. Now, I couldn't be more glad and more excited to have this episode's guests on. We're going to be talking about growth. We're going to talk what it's like to leave the corporate world, what it actually takes, and the success you can have as long as you are steadfast, know exactly what you want, and prepared to work hard for it. So without further ado, Anand, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today on the show. Why don't you start off with by introducing yourself? Tell us who you are and what is it that you do.
Hello, Gary. First of all, thanks for having me on this show, and I have seen your past episodes, and indeed, your show is very inspirational, and I have been watching several past episodes. It's indeed an honor to be on your show. My name is Anand Chaturvedi. I'm a founder CEO of Carify Inc. We are a business automation suite company, and we are helping long-term care providers in getting successful in what they do, which is looking after kids who need our help and seniors who need our help as well, staying in their home and communities.
Well, you know what? There's so much to unpack there. We're going to talk a little bit more and dive deeper into Carify, what it does, what the problems are. Because when I've been speaking to you before, I was totally unaware of these issues that you actually solve. So I'm really looking forward to unpacking that on this episode. But as per normal, why don't we start by going back a little bit? Let's start with your journey. What originally inspired you, Anand, to leave the corporate world, the safety of the corporate world, and to launch Carify?
Gary, several years ago, I started my career as a business consultant and in strategy. And later on, I joined the corporate world. And very soon, I became the leader of a strategy in IT for a large Fortune 1000 company in the United States. But at the same time, when I was rising on the corporate ladder, I had a personal tragedy. And that forced me to evaluate my life priorities. I quit my corporate role and dedicated myself to a nonprofit. And I ran that nonprofit for 3 years full-time. I still help it. And the transition from corporate world to a nonprofit was, as you can imagine, was not easy. And I learned during that time frame, that three years of my running nonprofit for the full-time, is that when you have a mindset of growth and of helping people, you don't have to be in nonprofit. You can also do certain things as a for-profit venture. And then I started to circle those areas where I can use my expertise from strategy and IT and my passion for healthcare, where I can use it. And I found that the perfect opportunity lies in helping people who are helping others staying at home. Now, why is that? Because I realized that healthcare begins at home. So that was the first premise. The second thing is my corporate life was spent mostly in a company called Bobcat. And those of your listeners who know Bobcat know that this is a small construction equipment. And this company was known for having a concept called be your own boss. That means fostering entrepreneurship. So that's what I have done for majority of my corporate life, fostering entrepreneurship. My passion lies in healthcare. I realized the healthcare begins at home. Combine those three Venn circles, and here I am, helping home healthcare entrepreneurs being successful. Very simple.
That's great. And as I said, isn't it funny how sometimes that we could be perfectly secure in one position, think this is the direction we're going, something happens in our life, and it completely turns us, like almost being knocked off course, but then the course is 10 times better than it was. So when you look back, as you said, from going from the corporate world to the nonprofit, what problem did you actually see in the home healthcare space that you just felt was too important to ignore?
Well, there are two pieces of the puzzle, Gary. People who are receiving home healthcare, you know, patients, their family members, and, you know, the entire ecosystem at home. And then you have people who are providing care. And oftentimes what happens, Gary, is that we focus more on care recipients, and rightfully so. So if my father is receiving care or my mom, I would be more focused on what kind of care they receive. But many times we don't think about that there is a business, there is a service behind that service provisioning. And what I found was that most of the entrepreneurs in this sector were drowning in paper, administrative overhead. This is not a highly paid job. So finding caregivers is absolutely tough. And there's a myriad of issues. And I thought, if I can solve one problem, if I can do it better than anybody else, I think that might be some contribution.
Yeah, I love the fact that, you know, when I'm be talking to you, one of the things I absolutely love talking to you about is the one problem, one person, one solution approach to the things that you do that made your success. So how long did it take you from concept of what you do? In fact, before I even ask that question, for people who don't know what Clarify does, can you explain to us who is it you actually help and what is it that you actually do to help them?
So we help those providers who are taking care of seniors and children. So we call them long-term care providers. And most of them are getting paid for by the government, either by state Medicaid programs or by VA and so on and so forth. And the problem we solve for them is one, which is administrative overhead. And Gary, what I found in my years of experience is that most of these providers are spending time and money in non-value-add activities like managing paper, managing compliance forms. And it is on an average between 18 to 25% of their revenue that they earn. Given the fact that they are in such tight margins, my focus was on helping them in managing that administrative overhead through a complete process automation. And we built our process from ground up.
So why did you decide to focus on Medicaid, Medicaid-based providers, instead of going the more typical private pay or franchise route?
So everybody else in this space is going after them, private pay franchises, because they see that there is a volume. And in our case, Gary, and we discussed that before, my priority was not on volume, my priority was on value. And if you look at Medicaid providers, they are, I would say, the poster children of how to survive an exceedingly complicated landscape where margins are very thin. The government sets up how much money you will receive. And now government is also mandating how much money they have to pay, which is nearly 80% of the revenue they have to pay their caregivers and nurses and training on them. That basically means they have to operate within very thin margins. And if we can help them being successful and grow within those confines, I'm sure that we can help a lot of people around the globe.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that bit. So let's talk about getting you off the ground. Let's talk about the focus it took to launch your new venture. You mentioned you model, and that's what I loved about it. You mentioned you model your rollout after Zuckerberg, you know, and his early Facebook strategy. Can you walk us through how that worked? How can you walk us through how you applied the Zuckerberg Facebook strategy to Clarify?
So as many of our listeners and viewers know, Zuckerberg started with Harvard. And his goal was that if Facebook can be used by students at Harvard, then he can scale that to top 10 Ivy League schools. And if more colleges use that, and it was essentially for college kids, one college, 10 college, all college kids, and then the rest is history. In our case, we focused on one state, Georgia, provider type, Medicaid. So we had a very small micro niche. And my thought process was, if we can help even within that micro niche, we focus first on home care only. And then gradually now in Georgia, we are serving all providers who are getting paid for by Medicaid. And the goal is to now scale that up, go to all other states which are getting paid for by Medicaid. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I think, as you said, that starting off with that one, rather than trying to go too far too quickly and go very, very thin across the board, you actually really focus down on one state, one issue. That's what you serve. Dominated that market. And I believe you are the top. If you're not second, you're nearly the top in that. And then your expansion plans is into other states, I'm assuming now.
Absolutely. So Georgia is acting as a nucleus for us, but now we are already in the states like North Carolina, Florida, Indiana, Michigan. And I'm sure that, you know, in these next 6 or 8 months, we will be even launching in another state before the year is over.
Well, I'm going to wish you the best of luck with that. And I have no doubt that people watching here is going to start seeing the Clarify name across all those new states. So let's talk about client acquisition. When you first started, you can have a great idea, you can have a great launch and a great rollout, but you didn't really have any case studies. And there's been people watching here and thinking, well, this is the chicken and egg. You know, before we can launch, we need a case study, but we can't really get our first client until we get a case study. How did you approach customer acquisition when you didn't have any case studies, a sales team, or even market reputation with what you were doing?
That's a great question, Gary. And that is always the toughest problem an early stage entrepreneur has to solve. In my case, I shadowed our potential customers for more than a year. I sat in their office, I took down notes, And I kept on telling them, this is what I'm building. I don't have it yet, but I will build it for you. And when I did that for, I think, nearly 8 or 10 customers, believe it or not, some of them actually paid me in advance for having the right to use the system at a very discounted price. So I pre-sold the system before I could even build it. And they could trust me. They did not know me. The only thing they knew was that every week, twice, I would show up with a pen and paper and sit down in their office and just ask the permission to shadow. No confidential information, none of that, but I wanted to know how their people interacted. And then after 3 months, I presented to them that this is how you are having a leakage of revenue. This is why people are quitting. And we can solve these issues if we have 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then I showed them a prototype, which is what you remember. I think many of you used to know, MVP. So I built an MVP with their participation, showed them the minimum viable product screens, and they said, you know, I am in. Here's a check. And if you show me the milestones, I will keep on paying you every month before the product is out. And that's how we started building the product. And I had a first customer. That first customer told 3 other friends that, hey, this young guy, and I was not that young, by the way, but is working on building me something. And I have the first divvy on this thing. And then we had from 1 to 5 customers even before we had an actual product.
Yeah, that is an amazing story because, you know, especially in tech, there's a tendency, and there'll be some people who are watching and some people listening here that will know exactly who they are when I start talking about this, is that they build it first and believe in the product so well, so much, that they just think people are going to buy from it because by the time they're, so they're building it before the market's even told them. But what you did was turn it on its head. You went, do you know what? I don't have the product yet. I know there is a product, but let me go and see what you need first and let me build it around you, is what you said earlier.
And Gary, this is a great point you mentioned because I belong to the second school that you just referred, which is not product, but find your customer. Mm. So in our case, I will give you this example. In our own experience, the version we are launching in 2025 is actually a third iteration of a product. The first product we built, we gutted it after 2 years. Then we rebuilt it a second. And now in the age of AI, all the softwares and software providers have to think that how do they fit in the agentic framework? We are rebuilding the entire product from ground up. What has not changed is our customer focus. We still have the same customer. But they are now being migrated to the third version of a brand new product, which has nothing in common other than the workflows. So in our case, we put our focus on the market and the customer needs. Rest was substitutable, and I think rest we could change anytime.
Yeah, I think there's a key. You nailed the nail on the head. You absolutely hit the nail on the head there when you talked about it's coming from the customers, coming from the marketplace, not just your head. We see time and time again, one of the challenges that especially tech founders have is that they get their product or their service from their head and expect the market to understand it, as opposed to the market telling you what they're at. It's almost like you went and found and sat in their room and said, where's the holes in your bucket? That you keep pouring money and whatever into this bucket, and where's the holes? Let me fix the holes that you can all see, as opposed to assume they want to fix those holes, which is a great thing. So one of the challenges that people have a lot of the time within our industry is building trust. And it's really hard to build trust, like we said, in something new, especially if you're an unknown. But what you did was build the trust before the product. You built the trust before the service. You built the trust before the sale by going in there. What advice or more insights could you share with that on building trust with your marketplace?
There's a lesson I learned, Gary, from my very first corporate role in management consulting. And my boss and my mentor at that time, who was a senior partner in automotive industry in Detroit, Michigan, once told me this, that in order to be a good consultant, you need to know your client better than she knows herself, which is you put so much time in understanding. And sometimes you don't have to ask questions. Sometimes you just have to observe, because this is a skill I learned as being a consultant, which is how do you observe? Because sometimes people show up with a pen and paper and they have a preconceived notion that these are the smart questions that they need to ask to impress somebody else. But if you observe, then you get to see so many things that people are not willing to concede, but they have a problem. They have an itch. And if you observe that, and if you tell them that, by the way, I can also solve that issue, and then they perk up. One of the reasons people trust you is because when they know that you understand them. And that goes a long way. And it's not a self-serving approach, I would say, Gary. I think it comes from having a genuine respect for the customer that you are serving, and also feeling a kind of a shared need of purpose. In my case, I will say that why I spent so much time spending hours and days, because I came from a nonprofit background. I knew that people are hurting. I knew that seniors who are being cared for by Medicaid don't get enough to eat. I know that they are being served at food deserts. So, you know, there's a passion, there's a purpose. When you do that, you know, people start seeing it. People can see through you and they are smart. And if they think that you are an ally, you know, things get easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's again, before we can even build the trust or get people to talk to us, we need to do some lead generation. Every business needs to do lead generation. Today, what is your primary method of generating leads? You have a very niche marketplace in which you operate and to a degree to which you now control. So what is your primary method of generating leads and winning new customers?
Primarily content. Gary, this is a micro niche market. So I stay abreast of all the changes, regulations, not only that, but also, you know, from business standpoint, the things which are happening that can help them in solving their immediate business challenges as a thought leader myself. And I don't claim that I know everything, but I try. And I share that very openly through emails, through, you know, podcasts like yours, and raising the awareness that we need to look at this opportunity as an industry. Long-term care is an industry. It's an ethical industry. There are issues. We can solve them. There are plenty of issues. And what that does is when people see that you know something and you know better than what they know, then they say, can you help me do X, Y, and Z? And then you have a product. Rather than sending them to, hey, I am another software provider and buy my software. Nobody wants that. They are burned by this.
Yeah, and that I think that literally just covers a majority of the tech industry, unfortunately. And that is, everyone sounds the same nowadays. Everybody's an expert in their field, and do agree they have to be. But unfortunately, when everyone's an expert, no one is ever seen as an expert because everyone is exactly the same. So what, in your opinion, Anand, what role does founder-led marketing or thought leadership play in today's business world, especially within the tech industry?
Gary, it's such an important question. I think about it every single day. And I think what I have come to the conclusion at is building your organizational culture. It's all about that. You see, founders, when they begin, when there is no customer, there is no success, there is no revenue, there is no brand recognition, there's one thing they have, which is a burning desire, a sense of passion or purpose, you know, how you want to quantify it. The question is, how do you translate that into your team? And then if you want to fire yourself and you say, you know what, I will not be involved. I will not be a bottleneck in the success of my own team. I will step aside. And how do you translate that? How does it come across as a natural, organic growth within your company? How do people tend to have a sense of camaraderie, common purpose? I think that's the most important thing. Everything else, you can automate, outsource, whatever. But that culture, building the culture is the most important thing.
And is the culture, do you believe, coming from the founder itself? Or is this now a shared thing? Because the reason why I say that is, certainly when I was growing my businesses before we sold them, it was very much of a case that a leadership role was to bring everybody on board your story, your desire, your passion. And then you lead from the front by saying, hey, let's get in the boat and we're going from here to here. And we're all going to get there together. But nowadays, there's a tendency to shift now from just the founders' desire and passion and direction and exit plan, as it were, to more of the group, the more of the team. Do you still believe it should be a founder-led goal rather than just a...
I believe so. And I'm sure that some of your viewers would disagree. And I'm open for a healthy conversation. I think what's happening, Gary, especially in the post-COVID era, you know, the group think, and I'm not denigrating that by any shape or means, the group think has tended to lower the quality of conversation. Because with the political correctness, we tend to assimilate all viewpoints to the extent that it becomes very generic out, right? Let's say you have a team of 10 people, they have 10 ideas. All of them have a brilliant idea. Sometimes it means that they are going in tangential directions. Some you might have to pivot. And in order to accommodate the group think, we don't pick one excellent idea. We take a generic broad brush approach that satisfies 10 people, but doesn't delight a single one. And then everybody thinks that they are living in a culture of mediocrity. I think that it's much better that until the company reaches reaches a certain level of success and customers associate that brand with certain values, then you can have a groupthink. But I think what is happening nowadays is people are jumping to a groupthink very quickly. I always believe, by the way, that your customers are the primary adjudicator of your brand values. They will tell you that you guys stand for quality, that you stand for safety. You know, Volvo could have said whatever, but it was customers in the 90s, not today, by the way, that Volvo stands for safety. And, you know, no matter what the founders of Volvo, nobody even know who the founders of Volvo were. But until you reach a certain level where customer associate your brand with certain values, groupthink, I would say, is premature.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I try not to take sides on this, but definitely that's something that I wholeheartedly believe in. It is that the vision has to be shining strong. And if you keep passing the beacon, everyone's just rowing for the sake of rowing rather than rowing to one beat and one direction. It's in order to get to a place, you need to have one direction, one beat, and then you can get there. So, you know, and like you, I'm open to a healthy conversation, and I'm pretty sure we're going to get some comments on this one. Well, about how we feel. So let's look to the future now. What are you most excited about in the next 12 to 24 months for Clarifi's growth?
Gary, I'm super excited with the adoption of AI. You know, we have been working on this for the last several years. And as you know, even our .com, our domain is not .com, our domain is .ai. You know, from a company standpoint, when we started Clarifi, now we also have several .coms, but that's not the point. The point is, AI is changing the fundamental way of doing business. And what I'm most excited is this agentic work. And what I believe strongly is the problem that we started to address at the beginning are now within our grasp, because this whole administrative overhead can be now taken care of by multiple AI agents, and it will improve quality of care. It is not going to replace human being with robots. It's actually going to make human more humane, genuine empathy for the people that they serve. And it's going to make this industry a far better place than it was some years ago.
No, I think AI is such a... We can't have a tech podcast without ever mentioning AI. AI is definitely here to say. And I was talking to, I would say, one of the... industry-led leader on AI. And he was asked, where do you see AI today in the realms of the internet? And he said, AI is like the 1996 of the internet. Absolutely. This is where we're just at the very beginning. People will start thinking, wow, we've come so far with AI. We've just come quickly. There's so much more to come when it comes to AI.
And yes, and that's a challenge too, because it is coming so fast. It's very hard. But again, you know, like everything else, you have to keep yourselves grounded and accept and adopt.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said earlier there, you know, it's not going to take over humans, but it's going to make people more humane. It's going to start, you know, people to become a lot more authentic and genuine in who they are, rather than just the fakeness and the lack of transparency through AI. So when it comes to your growth over the next 12 to 24 months, are there any specific marketing channels or growth strategies that you're looking at to double down on, for example, like podcasting or content creating? What type of channels are you going to sort of really focus on over the course of the next 12 months or so?
Absolutely, Gary. I think, as I told you earlier, one of the things that the central pillar of our marketing is our content. And we are looking at channels like podcasting. We are also looking at hosting virtual events. We are also looking into getting our content translated across some of the most spoken languages, especially in our industry, because we also are serving people who are having English not as a first language. So there are opportunities in terms of content personalization. And that is going to be something that we will be following very keenly for the next 18 months or so.
Yeah, I like that. The personalization of the content, because there's so much content out there that's so generic. When you look at it, it's content for content's sake, as opposed to real authority building, educational-based marketing, helping people where they need to be helped from doing so. So I'm really glad you say you're going to refocus on that. So as we come to an end of our episode together, what is the one... No, if you could be known for one core innovation or impact in your space, what would that be?
Autonomous caring. Two words. I want to be known that here was a guy who did something that was not considered possible before. We thought that autonomous caring was robotic care. No, it was not. Come up with a phrase that says human can be more humane when they adopt AI. And how and why and who can do that? That's exactly what I'm here to prove.
Oh, that's such exciting times. You're just filling me with goosebumps, Alan. I'm pretty sure people listening to go, woohoo, wow, can't wait to see that. That's good looking at it. So listen, what is the one, that's my last question to you. It's a bit of a loaded question for you. But what is the one takeaway you hope tech founders who are listening to this episode walk away with?
I would say that if you really believe in a mission, you need to be introspective, because there is no set age, experience or education to become a successful entrepreneur. And even word success is loaded, because success in terms of what? Satisfaction in terms of money or your family or something else. It's a lonely sport. It's a very lonely sport. And if you really want to be an entrepreneur, find that one thing or two things or three things that you really feel passionate about. Find an intersection. And in my case, I was fortunate enough, Gary, that I found the purpose. But I will also tell you that I did not find it overnight. I had different life experiences. If you would have asked me this question when I was in corporate world, what I wanted to do in my life, I would have said that I want to become a CEO of a publicly traded company, because that's what I have seen other people do. Today, my perspective is very different. And I'm sure that all entrepreneurs share the same philosophy in some shape or form. And those who are listening, those who wanted to be known for something in their industry, I would always say, find your why. If you have not read the book by Simon Sinek, I highly encourage you read that. Find your purpose, find your why. And, you know, rest will be relatively easier. I would not say it's going to be easy. It's going to be easier.
Absolutely. And I'm pretty sure, you know, I read that book years ago, and I think I'm pretty much sure that I am due for a reread, because you read it through once or twice and you put it aside, you think you work towards it. Life gets in the way. But definitely, I totally agree with you. What a great book. Find your why, and, you know, life will get easier. So, Anand, where could people get hold of you if they want to potentially work with you or know more about what you do? What's the best way of getting hold?
The best way to reach me, Gary, is find me on social media. I am on Facebook. I am on LinkedIn at Anand Cogent, and my website, anandchaturvedi.com. You know, so if you are searching for me on LinkedIn or Twitter, at Anand Cogent, which is AnandCogent, and my website, which is kind of a long name, but Gary, I'm sure that your team will have that in the footer. And then I'm always available for a healthy conversation.
Well, I will make sure that they don't have to search. All those links will be in the description, so they can just do the one click for you. Well, Anand, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing all those insights with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as per usual, if you have had any kind of insight today and thought, wow, Anand, that was fantastic, please make sure you like it and you comment so other people can see what you've learned as well from that. But more importantly, as always, share. Hit that share button. Share this episode with other people that you think they could learn from this as well. So until next time, keep striving. More importantly, keep being profitable. And we shall see you on the next episode.